Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm just going to pop out for a few seconds, and Suzanne Posel is going to take the helm. So, Guy Fawkes, Suzanne, do you know who Guy Fawkes was? Would you be able to give us a wee explanation while I go check something?
Okay. Guy Fawkes was a gentleman who was hired by some Jesuit priests to blow up the Parliament with King Henry... King James, I'm sorry, the same King James that commissioned the King James Bible. So he took a bunch of gunpowder and was caught before he actually ignited it. And therefore we have, in celebration of a hired Jesuit henchman, Guy Fawkes Day. And that's...
Now, what's happening today with Guy Fawkes is a pop culture reference, because we've all seen the movie V for Vendetta. I don't mind saying I thought it was a fantastic and a terrifically awesome film that kind of meant and said a lot. But now it's become the pop culture reference of I don't like the establishment and I don't want them to know that I don't like them, so I'm going to wear a mask and disguise my identity. Now, I recall we talked last time about what was it we were talking about? Crowd psychology.
Yes, yeah, I wrote a huge article about that.
So basically, the baseline of crowd psychology is if you're anonymous, then you lose your sense of self-control, you're much more easily manipulated, and you'll do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do because you've got the anonymity of the crowd. Instead of a crowd, there is a mask, so you don't even need a crowd. This is crowd psychology of one.
Yes, yes, because the identity of the person is masked by the crowd, so the mask could serve psychologically as the crowd itself, and then the person would feel free to behave in ways that they might not normally do if their identity were forefront.
You know what I've seen people on a V for Vendetta mask saying? I am a social worker, and I have worked with people that this government has absolutely let down and purposely destroyed their lives.
Yes. You know? Yes.
That's the kind of freedom being used for a good thing, you know, if it's the truth or whatever. It does pose a certain moral question, don't you think, when you're not accountable to your identity, are you really brave enough to stand up? But that said, some people prefer to linger in the background. They don't want to, you know, get all the attention and what have you, whereas some people are far more likely to get into that attention-seeking sort of career path. Like myself, for example.
Well, I've looked into Anonymous, and yes, some parts of Anonymous were hijacked by the FBI and CIA and used in for nefarious purposes. But just like any large group, I don't believe that every member of Anonymous works for the government. It, you know, they're everywhere and anywhere, so it couldn't possibly be.
And they could be anyone.
It could be, and not every Tea Partier was hijacked by the Koch brothers. You know, not every Tea Partier believes in everything that the hijacked version of the Tea Party stands for.
You know
people have to differentiate.
This is also another interesting thing. What happens when something you believe to be your favorite cause, or somebody you believe to be your hero? What if you found out that it was co-opted?
Well,
right, now, what happens is people you build a trust. Relationship with a radio host. Okay, you tune into them every day. You hang on every word. You frustratingly hold your breath through the ad breaks. And at the end of the day, you think that you know something about this person that you're watching or listening to every day, but you've never hung out with them. You've never given them a hug. You've never bought them a drink. Do you really know them? That's the thing. There is a whole other world on the other side of this microphone. 99% of it the audience would never find out about. Because it's a need-to-know basis. But there's some people in this movement. And it might even be a hefty chunk of them from a number of different spectrums. Some people don't want your freedom to be restored, but they just say that they do, so that you'll trust them and give them your support, just like any corrupt politician.
Yeah, I have a term for that. I call it branded loyalty. Once that person has the audience's, you know, branded loyalty, they believe that person regardless of what they say. They excuse any behavior, even if they don't agree with it. They make concessions for it simply because they believe in that person and their personal identity is attached to that person. So if that person falls, then the individual falls, and the individual listener or the individual audience member is not going to let their personal identity be affected by the thing that's happening to the person that they look up to.
It's about putting people on a pedestal. When you put somebody up on a pedestal, depending on how high you've put them, when they fall off that pedestal, when you find out different, you're the person that gets crushed as they come tumbling down, not them. They shrug it off like it's nothing and go on to scam somebody else. But you kind of lose your belief in the movement at all, because one douchebag gave you a bad experience and he was lying to you, and it's really unfortunate that you got sucked in. But there's a lot of people who say that's irredeemable. You can't so knowingly trust somebody and then be redeemed for it. I disagree. I think as soon as you realize you're being lied to and then start switching on to the truth, you're redeemed. Doesn't matter how badly you were lied to, how much of your life you spent listening or paying attention to somebody who was giving you a whole boatload of BS. You know, you live, you learn. Don't you? The fight goes on. Like like when you swear to the Constitution in the military, you defend it from the enemies, foreign and domestic. They specify and domestic, because you're just as likely to be stabbed from behind from somebody who you thought who was on your side.
Well, absolutely. We have in our culture branded loyalty. We believe in the Constitution. We believe in our country. We believe in the people that run the country. When we find out that those people are not doing what we think that they're doing, we become disenfranchised. Where do we turn? We thought we were Americans. We thought we were a constitutional republic. We thought we were this and that. Now we're not, or whatever that means doesn't mean the same thing anymore. It's an identity crisis.
And sometimes when you get disenfranchised, it's like, I was just thinking about like a pun with the disenfranchised, and is that kind of like when you're running a franchise like McDonald's and then you find out something really bad about McDonald's and so you foolishly buy another franchise for Burger King?
Well, no, disenfranchisement is that sense of crisis, that what you believed in to be true is not anymore.
Hey, I have one of those a day.
A lot of people do. It just depends on what kind of day you're having, I guess.
I turn a business into this. What if I turned being disenfranchised into a franchise?
Well, a lot of people have. You have a lot of antisocial movements that have turned that absolutely into a profit. Look at the goth culture, and now the emo culture, and any of the different sects of cultures that spin off from the original. They all come with their own set of music and movies, things you can buy, clothing you can wear, jewelry, makeup, hair care products. It's all set for you.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like a series of slides. I mean, think about this. You know, you ever been to one of those big water parks and you get right up to the top of the tower and there's actually quite a couple of different slides that you can choose once you're up there? And what's funny is you could conceivably, if you really wanted to get to the bottom and not use one of the slides, climb over the railing and dangle precariously as you climb slowly but surely down the side of the water slide structure. Or you could take one of these nine different water slides for your personality and your lifestyle and your language and education level, and wind up at the very end of that slide in a meat grinder every single time. It's not the easy way out that you should be looking for. It's actually the hard way out. Whatever's the hardest to do, that's probably the thing that you should be trying to do, because that's the only thing that's really worth doing, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. We live in a world of convenience, so we think everything is easy. It's easy to find a partner because you just have a couple dates and that's the person. You easily fall in love. You easily get a job. You know, just get a college degree and you'll be assured a job. Look, you've got this piece of paper. You know, but life really doesn't work that way. And so we become disenfranchised.
Well, there's a whole lot of these dis words. Disillusionment. And in fact, I recall a friend of mine told me, Suzanne, he made a anti-John Key, anti-National, anti-Labour, anti-New World Order post. And one of his friend's arguments against him was, you're just disillusioned. Hold on a second, mate. Are you telling me that the problem with my argument is that I'm not operating under an illusion? Like you? An illusion of freedom? That I actually recognize I'm a slave and you're a slave. In fact, we all are. We're just cattle, livestock on a global plantation full of scum and filth and pedophiles and Satanists. And the problem with my reality is I'm not operating under the illusion that everything's all sunshine and rainbows 24/7, mate. I operate under the reality that there's some real dark scumbaggery in this world. And the problem with scumbaggery is that it replicates itself. Always winds up infecting and taking over everything. Growing inexorably until it kills the host. Kind of like a cancer. I also operate under the reality that cancer cures exist, both literally and figuratively. And this is the problem with society, don't you think, Suzanne? Everybody is not looking for the cure. They're just looking for the little treatment.
No, because that's how we're trained.
Yeah. I remember back in the day in the 60s and 70s in New Zealand, if you were sick or something, they'd give you a spoonful of kerosene. You know that?
Oh, my God.
There's some hardy folk in this freaking country, yo.
Oh, that's worse than the, give the kids some brandy. They'll sleep well.
Yeah. Just a thimble.
Yeah. Kerosene.
Unbelievable. I read it in a Barry Crump novel. He's a classic New Zealand outdoorsman. We had a picturesque. He accidentally drowned like 6 kids in it one time. He was doing off road, and it had a whole bunch of kids in the back of the ute, and it upturned in a lake, and the kids died, and he kind of never recovered from that.
That is insane.
Now then you start talking again, putting people on a pedestal. You know, he was a hero to New Zealanders, and then all of a sudden the whole public gets crushed like that. You see, this is what happens. People have an investment in somebody other than themselves that embodies characteristics that you do not yet possess. You know.
Well, I've been looking into the French Revolution lately. I've been spending a lot of sleepless nights last couple nights, so I've been watching some documentaries on the French Revolution, and then I stumbled upon what happened 20 years later after the French Revolution was established and the Republic and their constitution was established, the Terror with Robespierre. And 55,000 French people died because they didn't believe in the Republic the way that the Republicans wanted them to believe in it. So they died. The guillotine was turned from the elite onto the people. By the people.
And for the people.
Yeah. This man rose to power. He was integral in having the French Revolution become a success the way that it was. And so he became part of the Ministry of Public Safety. And they signed the
Let me just get this straight. The guy responsible for cutting off the heads of a good portion of the population without so much as a trial, really, got made the Minister for Safety?
Oh, no, he was the Minister of Public Safety. And under his rule, he signed the first police state in. He signed a document in that resembles the NDAA, no right to trial, under suspicion. You could be executed under suspicion. You would definitely be jailed forever under suspicion. And they decided that anyone who, once they established the Republic, anyone who was not for the Republic was an enemy of the state, and they killed them.
hardcore, man.
Yeah.
Hey, I guess they knew... Wait. This was before the American Revolution, wasn't it?
The rise of Robespierre began 20 years after the French Revolution was established, and the French Revolution happened a few years after the American Revolution.
So America revolted before France did, right? Didn't France support the colony becoming free?
Yes, they did. And the people who started the revolution in France blamed the aristocracy for spending all the money in the coffers of the government or the monarchy on the American Revolution, and then, you know, making the French government completely destitute.
Hey, Suzanne, apparently you need to turn down a little gain on your mic a little. If you think about revolutions, I can't see a whole lot of really good examples in places, but there are a few good examples of revolutions that actually, you know, kind of worked, rather than just having some kind of scumbaggery turn up. Right. Anyway, I wonder...
I can't think of one.
Yeah, well, what about, Hugo Chavez? He wound up educating people with the Charter of Freedom and so on and so forth, or whatever it was. And then even when the CIA came and staged a coup, there were like 2 million people on the streets, and they got him back in, you know. So I think that kind of worked, because they managed to relieve a lot of the poverty and education problems. Not sure about human rights abuses or anything else going on in Venezuela at the time. I mean, like that, but for all intents and purposes, it's not that bad. And then, of course, there's Gandhi. Got the Indians off of the salt tax. Managed to get the British Empire to leave. That was an interesting peaceful resolution, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Here's two. All right, here we are. We're coming back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is November. Oh, hold on a second. Let me just see if I can do this right.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about Vendetta Guy Fawkes, who's incidentally the last man to enter Parliament with honourable intentions. As my sister says anyway, think about this. We're in the middle of a powder keg, regardless of the date on the calendar, aren't we? We're on the brink of World War, the economy's in the toilet, the food's all poison and toxic and running out, the seas are irradiated or contaminated with corrects at 9500, you got chemtrails all over the land, aluminium contamination of the ground and water supply. We're pretty well fracking screwed. Okay? Like, this is just kind of dawning on me. As it does. This is not a good situation we're in here. Everything, everywhere, is totally fracked. Including, of course, the large quantity of fracking going on all around the world. Including in New Zealand and the UK. And the USA and Canada and in Australia. Australia's been kind of copping the worst of it. Jeepers creepers. You should see what's happening to all the lakes and rivers everywhere, everyone. You know? Holy crap! I remember talking to the people, they used to see the rivers back in the 50s and 60s. You could see the bottom. You could see the bottom of these big city rivers. Now you can't see nothing. Nothing but 2 inches in front of your frickin' face. Everything's all coated with pollution. Crap everywhere. Dust and trash. homeless people in the streets, veterans. What the heck? How can people sit back and believe in the subjugations of any other person when if you just look, just frickin' look around at what is going on? You wouldn't believe a single thing that the politicians or any person that is quoted as being an expert has ever freaking said. They don't have any idea how bad things are because they're the ones who've made it this way and we don't hold them to account, do we? We just want to sit back, we want to relax, we want to take some time out because the days are long, the days are hard, it's a struggle to survive. And it's exactly the way they want us, struggling for survival, so that there is no middle class anymore. There is no people with enough time and money on their hands to actually organize and protest and get rid of the scumbaggery that enslaves them. There was an awful lot of big, massive social change 50 years ago or something like that. And now all the social changes are being dictated by Hollywood, Madison Avenue, movies, TV, the whole lot of it, designed specifically. Even your education, even the food you eat, everything's been branded, packaged, barcoded, tracked, traced, poisoned, destroyed, unnatural life. That's what we're living now. A completely unnatural life. And it's making everybody really ill and gosh dang crazy. Isn't it driving you nuts? Don't you feel it? That you're just getting sick all the time? And you're getting really, really effed off at things so easily? Something's coming. It's a powder keg waiting to explode, to bathe the whole world in flames and darkness. Just think about it for a moment. That is the reality that we live in. And now, you got to understand that despite the fact that all of that's going on, you're still here, you're still alive, you're still breathing, which means you can still laugh, you can still smile, you can still love. And while you can still do all those things, nothing is over yet. Nothing is over yet. And over till it's over, the fat lady sings, stuff is bad, sure, but it ain't over. Don't give up. Just stay alive in your head and in your heart. All right. I think I'm done ranting.
I'm sorry, I'm ranting. I said I'll get back to our guest. Susanna Bowles will tell you.
It was a good rant.
I thought so too. I gave myself chills.
Frustrating, and after a while, you know, you have to do something to lighten up, because otherwise, you're right, you'll go freaking nuts. You'll just be like this guy sitting on his porch in his rocker ranting. Nobody wants to talk to him.
Hey, at least he's getting some sun. Most people would be inside on their rocking chair ranting.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no, they're on social media in the comment threads.
Yeah. Well, isn't it funny that there are actually people on comment threads that are the equivalent of a crazy ranting homeless person on the side of the road that you walk by because what they're saying is unintelligible?
It is funny, but since they have a profile on a social media site, they have legitimacy. So it's not crazy ranting, it's dissemination of information. It's redefined.
It's because nobody knows how to discern fact from fiction anymore. It's been bred and educated out of the human condition.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about, like, everyone who looks into certain people in alternative media, find out some pretty insane things, but yet they say things like, well, that person woke me up. So you find out that they're compromised, but they woke you up. That means that everything that they told you could be compromised. So what did you wake up to? It's just logic.
Well, that's a good question. But the thing is, people have forgotten that you're supposed to put grammar before logic. Okay, you got to know the who, the what, the where, the when, and the why, and the how, right? Or something like that. Before you then start using logic, well, actually, if this happened, then that would happen, blah, 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 blah. Once, because if you've got all of that information, it reduces speculation down to a singularity. Then you can use logic and just go, boom, that's precisely what it is. And most people, instead, they use logic first. And they say, oh, the government would never do that. I mean, why? Why? It's just illogical to kill everybody that they're milking of money and so on and so forth. I mean, obviously they need us. Blah, blah, blah. No, they don't freaking need you, bro. You obviously haven't heard about the advances in robotics. They barely need any of us. You know, maybe half a billion. Tops. Frack the rest of it. You know, 9 out of 10. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, maybe some of the people listening to this are like driving around in an iPod or radio or something like that, and they're looking out over the traffic, you know, and it's seething and it's just terrible. And just imagine for a moment, 9 out of 10 of the people around you aren't there anymore.
Most people can't fathom that. They can't. They can't even.
You're looking at virtually empty streets, yo. All right, they're just not there anymore. You know, think about that. Because I don't care what people's argument is to not get involved in the movement. That's my argument to get involved in the movement. Not to see everybody get freaking ruthlessly and inexorably exterminated, you know. Perhaps my motivations are somewhat, I don't know, silly. Maybe trying to... Hold on a second. This brings me to another important thing that I was thinking about. People who say that it's a good thing that we're about to all die. What the hell is up with that? Are they suicidal? Or are they so programmed with some BS human guilt complex? Oh, we're responsible for the destruction of the rainforest and the contamination of the oceans. Well, yes, we are responsible, but not you specifically. You didn't dump all of that stuff, did you? And if you wanted to do something about it, you could. So stop blaming the entire human race for the problems caused by a few scumbaggery elite people. It's freaking stupid. It's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's throwing the whole world out with the scumbaggery. It's a stupid mentality. I don't mind saying it. Because it inherently gives you over to not caring about other people. What do you think the problem with the world is, mate? It's that people don't freaking care about each other anymore. They're all plugged into their frickin' iPhones. They don't even notice your frickin' existence. Put down the damn thing. Make eye contact once in a while. Sweet mother of mercy. We're capable of travelling the stars and both inner and outer. And we're stuck on frickin' Facebook 90% of the time.
Yeah. Isn't that insane? The world around us, we don't participate in the actual reality with our neighbors and our friends, or even when we go out in public. We don't look at people in the eye when we're on the street. We don't say hello. Maybe somebody will hold the door open for you, but if you don't get there within like 30 seconds, then, you know, the door shuts in your face. There's pleasantries, hello, how are you, but nobody really cares how you are. And yes, we sit and we chat we text message and we chat online all night, like we're socializing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just taken the effort out of it. And the fact of the matter is, chatting with somebody online is nowhere near as good or as intense or as engrossing as being with them in person. You know, it's just not possible, is it? And as a result, we miss out on very important human interaction. And I think it dehumanizes us to a certain extent. And in a way, by keeping us literally out of physical contact with humanity, you lose your humanity entirely. It makes you much easier to control if you don't really care, if you think everything's virtual, if you don't realize that when you cut somebody, they bleed, and it's not just some video or Hollywood frickin' splash blood of slasher movie. Mm-mm-mm.
Well, isn't that funny that we watch these horror movies and then we're not even remotely affected when we see pictures of the devastated buildings and babies in the rubble and fathers holding their dead infants, regardless of what continent they're on, regardless of what culture they happen to have been born into, that's not a factor. You see a father holding his dead baby from a building that was blown up by a drone, and you have no feeling toward that. And I wonder if, you know, I grew up in the 80s, Freddy Krueger and Jason, those were the big movies. I couldn't watch them because I can't stand that, but they made like 1,000 of each of them when I was growing up, and everybody watched them, and it was no big deal.
Well, you get desensitized after a time, don't you? It seems, I recall reading some of the reviews of the original Alien when it first came out in theaters, and the chest burster scene. And apparently, and this is back in 1979, people were so shocked from seeing that alien burst out of his chest that they vomited in the aisles, fainted, ran screaming from the movie theater. Like, it was a huge, massive shock to the system. You play that stuff today and it's like almost quaint, you know? They've got things grosser than that on frickin' Fear Factor and primetime TV that kids are watching now.
Yeah.
They got strippers on TV all day and all night on the music channels. It's freaking unbelievable how saturated, how culture has become with scumbaggery and debauchery that is winding up, playing itself through our progeny. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
Fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us.
Welcome back.
Lead to the collapse of us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. At least I hope we're live. Yeah, been some downright scary problems going down at the network down there in good old boy Texas. It's not good. It's not old. And, oh boy. My very special guest is Suzanne Poser. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We touched on quite a few subjects on that first long segment. And now, what is happening around the world? Let's talk World War III. So we've got the Syria situation, which allegedly also involves a seven-plus billion, 100 billion gas deposit under Israel that they want to get through Syria, and they can't do that while Syria is free and independent. And let's think about that powder keg there. What's happening down in Europe? I don't understand the geopolitical situation right now, because after Obama backed down from military intervention into Syria earlier on this year, I was kind of like, I was pretty sure that we were kind of prepared for war there at that point. So what stopped them? Do you have any ideas, Susan?
Well, they said that Syria had chemical weapons. It's the same sarin gas that has been making its way throughout the Middle East. It started with Rumsfeld selling it to Saddam Hussein, you know, to when he was fighting with the I can't remember. Sorry, guys.
He was fighting with Iran.
Not so good. Yes.
He was fighting with Iran.
Yes.
Was it with the Shah?
We installed the Shah.
Yeah.
I think it might have been when we were trying to take the Shah out.
Yeah.
But anyway, the World Health Organization has announced that after 14 years of no polio, all of a sudden polio shows up. So we're not going to bomb them, but polio shows up. And so the World Health Organization wants to do this massive vaccination campaign, vaccinating every child in Syria with polio, essentially, because according to the CDC, the way that you contract polio is through the virus. Through the vaccination.
All right. Okay.
Sorry.
So, everybody, in order to protect you all from polio, we're going to give it to you. I love vaccination, you know. It's so logical and reasonable sounding.
Yes. If they can't bomb them, they're just going to throw out a bioweapon and kill them anyway. But they've got the pipeline. See, Syria, Iraq, and Iran want to get together and build this natural gas pipeline. And the Israeli government have discovered that they have an exorbitant amount of natural gas, and they want to build a pipeline with a bunch of other people. You can't have two pipelines in the Middle East, so someone's got to go.
Hey, this town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Exactly, that's what it is.
As Big Bill Rockefeller would say.
And this also affects the global economy, too. Because the United Nations said last year that the whole world needs to move to natural gas. And we've been fracking and selling it. And we're the third largest exporter of natural gas, the United States is. And if the global reserve currency right now is hooked up with the petrodollar, which, you know, the U.S. dollar is hooked up with OPEC, and we've actually been under sanctions. The U.S. has been under sanctions with OPEC since the 1970s. And so if we're dependent on petrol, then we are subject to the Middle East. But if we are dependent on natural gas, then we are not subject to the Middle East. So you have this movement toward natural gas, away from petrol, the restructuring of the global reserve currency, and you have countries fighting each other to maintain control over energy resources.
Well, if you have geopolitical control of the region, you have control of the world to a large extent, provided everybody is on oil. The problem is, of course, this drive towards natural gas is prompting other countries to imbibe in rather copious quantities of hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as fracking, which contaminates the water table. And, of course, once the water table is contaminated, you can't live in that area. You just can't. Water is life. And what's strange, though, is the alternative to getting oil, which is a really abundant resource and regrows itself, according to Lindsay Williams, who's on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline or something like that back in the 70s when they discovered Gull Island. So instead of harnessing an infinite resource using appropriate technology like the Pogue carburetor, for example, that was able to get 200 miles a gallon, with 99% less emissions, because 99% of your emissions are actually just unburned hydrocarbons. And if you vaporize them in the engine, you don't have that problem. Way more surface area. Now think about this. You'd have to use bugger all oil. Oil prices would be like nothing if you're getting 200 miles a gallon. That's 20 times what you're getting now. Virch. Something like that. It's ridiculous. See, we're all slaves to these BS oil barons who conceal all the technology, and then they prop up proxy wars if you don't like their oil cartel. You know, you have a look at Saddam Hussein. Oh, I'm going to sell oil for euros. Boom! You frat, back in the back of the head. And then Gaddafi. Hey, we're going to sell oil for gold. Boom! Over in the back of the head.
And yeah, and Assad, same deal. Same exact story, different players. We've seen this many times before.
As they say in the ghetto, the players may change, but the game, it stays the same.
Yes, absolutely. So are we using petrol? Are we using natural gas? The fact of the matter is we have technology where we don't need to use metered energy. And it doesn't make any money for anyone, so nobody's going to manufacture it and make it available for the general public.
I do believe that this would be a great way of freeing the human race. If you're free to travel in any direction for 1,000 miles for $50, can you imagine? Just imagine what a massive boost that would do to the economy, especially if there's no air pollution to deal with at the same time. I mean, come on. People are talking about, oh, it'll shut down this, that, or the other. Yeah, but people will have all this free energy to start all new, amazing businesses that use 1,000 times the energy that they were using and not even have to pay for it.
Right, they use the fear that, oh my God, your life is going to change. It's not going to be the way it is now. You won't have all the conveniences. If we switch over, we have to stay the way that we are. Otherwise, you know, God only knows how much it's going to cost or what we're going to have to go through, or will this technology fail? We know that this technology that we're using right now, we know that it works. Let's just stick with it.
Yeah. Excuse me, what we've got ain't working, all right? The system in its entirety, all the technology, entertainment and politics and spirituality and everything that you could possibly conceive of that governs a society is fracked. Absolutely fracked. There's no escaping it. Therefore, anybody who sticks up for the system must be clinically insane. and sure enough, they actually are. Have you noticed this, Suzanne?
I have, but, you know, it's funny that they use the same argument for us. You know, Al Gore was just on Jimmy Kimmel saying climate deniers are insane. They have a psychiatric disorder. They're nuts. Carrie Norgaard, last year, out of the Oregon State University, was saying that they need to be under psychiatric care if you deny climate change.
Yeah, well, I think they're right, actually. If you deny that the climate changes, you are clinically insane. However, however, to deny that you want to be taxed on the very breath that you exhale is not insane at all. To want to tax that, on the other hand, that's freaking nuts. And sure enough, all of these people, all of these climate cultists, as I call them, are completely and utterly insane. Total eugenics. Seriously. These people are like, well, I'm never going to have children because it's bad for the environment. And I'm going to make sure that nobody else, I'm going to encourage everybody else to not have children as well. You're promoting the frickin' extinction of the human race. We've already got like a birth rate of like 1.6. And you need 2.4 in order to actually sustain a society so that it doesn't go extinct a la dinosaur style, buried in the Badlands in a contorted position, you retard. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the fossilized version of talk radio. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.